This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had to be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello there, this is Gary Clinton, welcoming you to Night Transmissions, show number 43. Tonight, we're going to start off with the English radio show, The Black Museum, where Orson Welles does the introductions and narration. Tonight's show, The Walking Stick, is based on an actual murder case, as are all of the stories on The Black Museum. They've taken some liberties with the events and even the name of the main character. The story it's based on is a murder case that took place in February and March of 1865, in which Dr. Edward Pritchard, and as you listen to the radio drama, you'll notice there's a name change there, murdered his wife and mother-in-law in Glasgow, Scotland. Another detail that's changed in the radio play is, although they never proved it and he was never tried for it, he was also suspected of the murder of a third person, a servant girl. As a note, Dr. Pritchard was the last person to be publicly executed in Glasgow. So, fresh from 1951, here is The Walking Stick.
The Black Museum. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. A warehouse where everyday objects, a salt shaker, a pair of scissors, an umbrella, all are touched by murder. A walking stick. Black wood, silver mounted. Maybe it's real ebony. Stick which might have belonged to your grandfather. It's that vintage, about 1865. A gracious era with crinolines and beaver hats.
Still harping on that walking stick of yours, Martinson?
I have stated 1,000 times and in public, this stick was given me by Garibaldi. I'm proud of it.
Well, it's not really my business, of course, but don't you think, Martinson, you ought to stop lying to yourself? Even if you don't stop lying to the gullible public.
Walking stick can be seen today in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death.
And here we are in the Black Museum. Here lies death. I make no virtue of killing, but I'm fascinated by the facts. Facts I've learned in this room from these silent witnesses to the act of murder. Now, this is a plaster cast of a heel print. Found, it says on the small label, in a flower bed outside a ground floor window. Note the scratches in the rubber heel. Those markings led a man to the gallows. This is a steel file, sharp-pointed, well-tempered, meant for cutting metal cleanly. This file, no, it was not used to escape a prison. No, it was used to put a man in prison. This file became a weapon, cut through human flesh and bone. Ah, here we are, the walking stick. It came from Glasgow more than 80 years ago. 1865. Its owner was Dr. Richard Martinson, an interesting fellow. Loved to give lectures, sometimes with lantern slides on places where he said he'd been.
This is Capri, lovely isle in the Mediterranean, loveliest of all the seven seas. Here, as you can observe, blue waters with a picturesque coastline, adding their soft...
He had the soul of a poet, apparently, this Dr. Martinson, and he was, according to himself, a great lover of liberty.
I knew Garibaldi, whose courage was as great as man's can be. Garibaldi set freedom above life. He gave me my walking stick as a token of the high esteem in which he held me. Altogether a remarkable man.
Of course, there were those in Glasgow who were skeptical. Perhaps with reason.
Kepri, my foot. Martinson's never been out of the British Isles except for 1 week in Paris. And as for that Garibaldi nonsense, balderdash.
The discussions about his veracity didn't help Dr. Martinson's practice. This was something of a pity, as the doctor had a wife who was chronically ill.
And how are we today, Sylvia, my dear?
Oh, as well as I can expect, Richard.
Have you had anything to eat today?
I don't have any appetite, you know that.
The tonic I gave you is to stimulate your appetite, dear.
Oh, I can't abide the tonic, Richard. I'm sorry, but I can't.
You make me feel rather inadequate, darling. Not only as a provider, but as a doctor as well.
Oh, don't feel like that, Richard, please. It's not you. You're doing your best, I know.
I hope I am, my dear. I truly hope I am.
It is a little strange. I'm the one who's ill, and I'm doing the...
But Dr. Martinson bore up under his trials. He bore up rather well. And then company came. To stay.
Richard, I don't believe you're giving Sylvia proper attention.
Now, Mother, to me, she's getting the best medical care available.
And she still won't eat. Richard, you're a fool. I won't have my daughter neglected. I won't have it.
You won't have it? So you suppose I enjoy it?
I've made up my mind, Richard. I'm taking over where Sylvia is concerned. First thing necessary is strength.
Oh, yes. Mrs. Toomey had come to stay a while. And she made her presence felt at once. In the kitchen.
Evelyn, I want to make my daughter something light and tasty. Do you have any tapioca in the house?
And, of course, in the bedroom. Particularly in the bedroom.
Put the tray on the dresser, Evelyn.
Yes, ma'am.
Mother, what is it you're doing now?
Just rest yourself, dear. You may go, Evelyn.
Yes, ma'am. Of course.
But, Mother...
Hush, darling. Your mother's here now, and you're going to start eating at once.
Oh, Mother.
Now, it's tapioca. Light. Really tasty.
Oh, Mother, I can't. I won't.
Look, I'll put some sugar on it, right from the bowl. There we are. Now, doesn't that look appetizing?
Oh, I can't stand the sight of it, really, Mother. I'm not a child.
Look, I'll eat some. Do you remember, dear, how I used to get you to eat when you were a tiny lass? By eating from your plate myself. Like this. Now it's your turn, dear. Come.
Of course it didn't work. Would it work with you? Of course not. Mrs. Toomey ate all the tapioca herself.
Evelyn, what in the name of...
Oh, Doctor, she's taken so sick.
Who has taken sick, girl? My wife?
Oh, no, sir. It's the old... It's Mrs. Toomey. She's taken dreadful sick. Moaning and groaning and all. She woke me up, she did. With the noise of it.
Richard, please. Is Mother sick?
It seems so, dear.
Oh, please do something, Doctor, please.
All right. I'll go to her. Meanwhile, you get your coat on and run for Dr. Barclay on the High Street. Hurry now, I hesitate to treat my wife's mother.
That's quite ethical, you know. If you're a doctor, you don't treat members of your family yourself. Dr. Barclay, despite his reservations concerning his colleague, honored his own Hippocratic oath. He returned at once with Evelyn.
Oh, take my coat, girl. Where's the patient?
Yes, sir. In there.
Good of you to come over so quickly, Barclay, in spite of everything.
Our job, Martinson, is to heal the sick. Now, let me see the patient.
First, Barclay, I think you should see this.
Oh, where did you find it?
Near her bed. She reeks from the stuff.
Oh, then this is nothing more than an ordinary drunken...
I would diagnose it as something more. She's been taking some of this, apparently.
I know that sedative. Opium base. What's your diagnosis, Martinson?
Apoplexy. She's the choleric type, you know, apparently subject to these attacks. Now, if you'd care to examine the patient, Doctor, I should be glad to give you whatever assistance...
Barclay examined the suffering woman, prescribed a sedative, and went on his way.
He called again the next morning.
Oh, she seems to be resting comfortably, Martinson. She'll be all right in a day or two, I'm sure. If you want me, send the girl.
The coolness between the two medical men remained, and succeeding events didn't tend to improve their relationship.
Richard, my mother, and I'm the one who's sick.
It must come to all of us, Sylvia. Your mother lived a full life. Now she is at rest.
But I'll miss her. I'll miss her terribly.
The passing of her mother was extremely upsetting to Sylvia Martinson. Her husband, qualified physician that he was, used to the sight of death, seemed somewhat affected himself. His wife was not present to see him.
Evelyn, I want you to see something.
Yes, Doctor?
This bottle. Remember it?
Well, of course, sir. I bought it from the chemist myself. Mrs. Toomey sent me. She said it was for sleeping.
When was that exactly, Evelyn?
Day before yesterday. The day she came.
And the bottle was full then?
Oh, yes, sir.
And now...
Well, you can see for yourself, Doctor. More than half the medicine's gone.
Exactly. And I want you to remember this if there should be any question. Understand?
Yes, sir.
I've made out and signed the death certificate. Can you find your way to the registrar's office?
Oh, yes, sir.
Go there, then. I'll give you a note. File this paper. I've certified the cause of death as apoplexy. Understand?
An obedient girl, that Evelyn. Not too bright, perhaps, but obedient. Very loyal to the doctor. In fact, her loyalty had a tendency to brim over at the edges.
I think he's a grand man, grand.
And why, may I ask?
Well, you only cook for him, Mrs. Bemis. You don't see him at the front of the house like I do. So considerate, so kindly.
Have some more cheese, Evie.
Thank you, I will. Now, this cheese, he went to the other end of the city for it, just to tempt the madam to eat something. But she wouldn't touch any of it.
It's a husband's duty to care for his wife.
The doctor does more than his duty. Spends all that time at her bedside. Tries to help her every way he can.
Maybe it's because he's got so much time on his hands, not having many patients and all. I'll have a bit more of that cheese myself. I heard over the fence yesterday, half the neighborhood is talking of what a prevaricator he is. Oh. With his walking stick from the Italian. Nonsense.
If he says it was a gift...
Then you can be sure it was not. A great one for making up...
A bit of below-stairs gossip, a touch of the local scandal that kept patients away from the doctor's door, just some gossip at the end of the servants' dinner, as they lingered over the cheese poor sick Sylvia had refused. Yes. The cheese.
Evelyn. Bicarbonate. Oh, where does the doctor keep his bicarbonate of soda?
Well, I think in the medicine cabinet. I don't feel so well myself. No. I'll get it.
Oh, hurry. Oh, my stomach, that twisted. It must have been the cheese. Oh, it did taste a bit tangy. No, hurry. Oh, no, thank heaven. The poor mistress refused to... touch it.
Thank heaven, yes. Oh, if I can find the soda, if I can find it quickly without...
Another tiny piece of the puzzle. Another incident. The cheese which the wife refused. As she refused nearly every other food in the house. As she literally starved herself. Wasting away. Slowly. Slowly.
I'm glad you called me when you did, Martinson. Your wife's in bad shape. Looks as if she hadn't eaten or slept in days.
Poor Sylvia. She's had gastric fever for months, you know.
No, I didn't know. High time you called me. Here, send your girl for this sedative. We'll get her some sleep. Then we'll try to take care of her properly. You can't dodge truth with this doctor, as you do with your walking stick.
Oh, Mother, I see you. You're here.
Doctor, what's happening? She's talking to her mother.
It happens sometimes in the crisis of gastric fever. The patient has hallucinations induced by weakness.
Oh, Mother, help me. I'm afraid to die.
Oh, Doctor, can you do nothing? Doctor, she's dead. She's gone.
No, Sylvia, no.
Dr. Martinson's grief seemed genuine. How much of everything was play-acting, and how much was truth? And the answer to that question lay in the doctor's own hands, in the shape of a walking stick. That same stick that can be seen today in the Black Museum. They took Sylvia Martinson to Edinburgh, to her own family, to place her with her mother. Her heartbroken husband took the long, slow journey, and it was long and slow in 1865. At the church.
No, it isn't so. I cannot accept it. I cannot. Wait. Wait. Before you take my beloved away, let me kiss her sweet lips once more.
A trifle overdone, don't you think? Well, perhaps it was sincere. However, emotion was not considered unseemly. However, other things were considered so, and people at times made it their business to call the attention of strangers to such happenings.
Here's a peculiar business, Stuart.
Just another letter, Sergeant. A crank, I'd say.
I'd like to think so, but this fellow seems to know what he's talking about.
Are you certain it's a man, Sergeant?
Well, do you notice the signature? Amicus Judiciae. Friend of Justice. Masculine. A man.
Uses a foreign language.
Latin. That's what it is. Latin.
I thought only doctors knew Latin. And chemists. To read the prescriptions the doctors write.
You haven't read the letter yet. Read it, Stuart. Read it carefully.
Gentlemen of the police, it appears to me that a man who falsifies the way he obtained a walking stick and creates fantasies of troubles he never experienced may well be a subject for suspicion in other matters. Odd? Why?
Go on. Keep reading.
The man whose fabrications have entertained some and bored a great many more is the same man whose mother-in-law died some few weeks ago under rather strange circumstances at his house in Socky Hall Street. Yesterday, this man's wife also died under strange circumstances. This man is Dr. Richard Martinson, and it is the writer's belief that a thorough investigation can be only of benefit. Either it will restore public confidence in a man of medicine, or it will uncover a murderer. Amicus Judiciae. Well.
They never found the writer of that letter. But in the Martinson house, which was searched, Warren provided, with a great deal of thoroughness while Evelyn Warren looked on.
Found this, Sergeant.
Medicine bottle. Oh, nothing particularly out of the ordinary about that in a doctor's house. Or is there now? Is there, my girl?
Oh, no, sir. Nothing at all. We have dozens.
All with the label? Sleeping draught? Mrs. Toomey is directed? All of them?
No, sir. Only one. That one.
Not much left in it, is there? Anyone been taking it?
Oh, no, sir. The doctor was very definite. No one was to touch it. He showed it me just after the old Mrs. Toomey passed on.
Stuart.
Yes, sir?
I want an analysis of the contents of this bottle, and I want a copy of the prescription from the chemist who filled it.
But there couldn't be anything wrong with it, sir. Well, I fetched it from the chemist's shop myself.
Oh, you did, girl. Good. Then you can take us there.
The analysis was over quickly enough. The report was quite brief.
Here it is, Sergeant. 10% mineral poison antimony. Sufficient to kill a strong man, let alone an elderly lady.
Next stop, the chemist, where Evelyn Warren had obtained the sedative.
My name's Pine, sir. Sergeant Pine, CID, Glasgow Police.
Yes, Sergeant.
Do you know this girl?
Not by name, sir. But you are Dr. Martinson's maid, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I am.
Good enough. Perhaps you'll tell me what was in the sleeping draught the girl had here.
It's a standard mixture, Sergeant. Some opium, not very much. We sell only small quantities. Some people have been known to boil it, evaporate the other contents to get at the opium itself.
Any mineral poison antimony in it?
Poison? poison.
Quiet, girl. Well, sir?
That's tartar emetic you speak of, Sergeant. There'd be nothing like that in our sleeping draught.
You're positive?
Oh, yes. Of course, Dr. Martinson did obtain some of the emetic from us occasionally in the past few months.
Enough to cause trouble?
He's a doctor, Sergeant. He'd know how and when to use it.
The telegraph wires, it was 1865, remember, hummed between Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Edinburgh Police CID official. Request exhumation order and autopsy, Mrs. Harry Toomey, daughter, Mrs. Richard Martinson. Suspect homicide, wire reply, Payne, Sergeant, Glasgow Police CID.
The wheels were turning, even while the wheels of the train bringing Richard Martinson back to Glasgow were slowing to a stop in the railway station.
Dr. Richard Martinson?
Yes, I am he.
I'll have to ask you to come with me, sir.
May I ask who you are and how you knew my name?
Detective Stewart, sir, CID. Your description was given me, particularly the walking stick.
Oh, yes, this. Given me by Garibaldi, a great man. He... Am I under arrest?
The sergeant has a few questions, sir. If you'd step this way, I have a hansom waiting. Sorry to put you to all this, doctor, but it can't be.
Didn't wait for the autopsies. They took the doctor in charge, as they put it, at once. Suspicion of murder was the booking. A short while later...
Report from Edinburgh, Stuart. Both women were poisoned. The wife was full of arsenic. Apparently, he'd been getting it into her for quite some time. It's a cumulative poison.
The charge was changed simply to murder. The trial paraded the usual number of experts and police officers to the witness box. The medical evidence was almost overwhelming. But through it all, not one shred of motive. No one could find a reason for these deaths. Until at last, the Solicitor General, the public prosecutor in those days, brought in a surprise witness.
Your name, please, miss?
Evelyn Warren.
Miss Warren. We understand you were the housemaid in the establishment of the prisoner.
Yes.
During your employment in that household, did the prisoner make any advances to you? Did he? Answer me, Miss Warren.
Yes.
When did this happen? Before his wife fell ill?
Yes.
What did you do about it?
I spoke to the mistress. I asked to be let go.
What did she say?
That I was to stay and she would speak to the doctor.
Did she?
I don't know.
Did the advances continue?
Yes.
Did he ever ask you to marry him? Did he ever promise to marry you after his wife died? Answer me, did he?
Yes, sir. But only once, sir. Only once.
Was this the motive? Counsel for the defense refused to accept it, naturally. Strangely enough, the defendant never took the witness stand in his own cause. Not once during the trial did he utter a word. It was almost as if he welcomed punishment, as if he were already walking out to meet it. The judge spent a part of his charge to the jury on the question of motive.
The question of motive is not your concern in this case. Why this murder was committed is of no moment. How it was done, by whom? If murder was committed, and if it was, did Dr. Martinson commit it? You have heard the evidence. Now you will consider your verdict. And during every moment of your deliberations, remember, the decision you make can never be undone.
The jury was out exactly 55 minutes. The verdict they brought in gave the judge no choice of sentence.
Richard Martinson, you stand before us found guilty of a terrible crime of premeditated homicide. It is the sentence of this court that you be carried from the bar to the prison and there be detained until the 1st of July, 1865. And upon that day, to be hanged by the neck until dead.
And the walking stick, The evidence which helped the slender value of the doctor's word, that stick which helped to hang him, can be found today in the Black Museum. Why did he do it? What had he to gain? In modern terms, what compulsion drove Richard Martinson to sacrifice his future as a physician to the lies of his lectures, to the fabrication of his walking stick story, to the murder of his wife and her mother? Perhaps today psychologists would have the answer. In 1865, no one had the answer, not even Richard Martinson himself. He did state, just before he died, "I can assign no motive for the conduct which actuated me beyond a species of terrible madness and the use of ardent spirits." And now, until we meet next time, till we meet in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Out of the telltale traces embedded in the ancient rocks, science has constructed a picture of prehistoric life. It is a picture filled with grotesque and monstrous creatures who walked the earth at the dawn of the world. At least, so the textbooks tell us. But then, the textbooks carefully ignore the bewildering experience of a man named Amogino.
Among zoologists and paleontologists throughout the world, the name of Professor Florentino Amogino was known and esteemed. Each year, in his opening lecture at the South American University where he taught, the professor would stress what an accurate and exact science paleontology has become.
During the coming year, are not guesses. We know that there were such animals as the dinosaurs, the giant sloths. We know what they looked like.
Yes, Professor Amogino was almost complacent in his faith in the science which he taught. But on a certain day in the late summer, the professor arrived at the university to find a small box lying on the desk in his office.
What's this box doing here, Ramon? Someone sent it all the way from Patagonia. Oh, here's a note on top. Dear Professor, I know you will be interested in this. It was found hanging on a bush near Ultima Esperanza. The natives claim to have killed the animal it belonged to, but they do not know what kind of animal it was. Perhaps you can figure it out. That is a piece of hide. What sort of creature?
Wait a minute. No, it could not possibly be.
A few days later, when Professor Amogino arose to deliver his opening lecture to his new class, the air of assurance, of authority, was gone.
What I teach you is not to be taken as gospel truth. Perhaps our whole science is a structure of self-delusion. I do not know.
Word of this strange, disturbing lecture spread through the university. When it reached the ears of the professor's colleagues, one of them sought him out in his office and reproached him. The professor's only answer was to take the piece of hide from the box on his desk and hand it quietly to his colleague.
How old would you say this skin is, Doctor? When did the animal die?
Well, not more than a year ago, obviously. The skin is still quite fresh.
And what sort of animal was it?
What animal do you think it was?
I know what animal it was. That is the skin of a giant sloth.
A giant? Are you out of your mind, man? The giant sloth died out at least 25 million years ago. This cannot be the skin of a giant sloth.
No, it cannot be, can it? And yet, that's precisely what he is.
Until the day he died, Professor Florentino Amogino maintained that he had correctly identified the piece of skin. And since his death, evidence has accumulated to justify his opinion. But how a prehistoric monster, a member of a species condemned to death eons ago by the laws of evolution, could have been wandering across the plains of Patagonia in the 20th century, this science has never explained. It remains a mystery, incredible but true.
Ah, okay. This is the first break for today. I know. You don't need them. But I need them. I guess. You know, actors are reputed to be a superstitious lot. I really don't know. I've spent no time in the theater or around actors. But everybody says they are, so maybe they are. Next, from Quiet Please, we have The Hat, The Bed, and John J. Catherine. It's about a stagehand who wants to be an actor and believes that he can act as well as most of the actors that he sees around the theater. And like many an actor, or at least what we would believe many an actor to be, John is quite superstitious. And I guess there's a superstition in the theater that when somebody places a hat on a bed, it's a sign of the owner of the hat's approaching death. So it gives John quite a turn to see his own hat on a bed. Quiet Please was created by Willis Cooper, who also created Lights Out. It starred Ernest Chappell as the show's announcer and lead actor. It began on June the 8th of 1947, syndicated by the Mutual Broadcasting Company. It ran until June the 25th of 1949, by which time it was on ABC. There were a total of 106 shows, of which this is number 104, airing on June the 11th of 1949. Quiet Please, now considered to be one of the finest shows of the golden age of American radio drama, however, and I guess this isn't unusual, it was not a huge success during its initial run.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Broadcasting Company presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called The Hat, The Bed, and John J. Catherine.
When I talk to you about John J. Catherine, I'm talking about me. I've got into more battles about my last name. I've had to make it clear to at least 4 million people that Catherine is my last name, not my first. And in the process, I have accumulated more numerous contusions, fractures, superficial abrasions, black eyes, and bloody noses than can readily be counted by one person. Now, disregard my personal adventures in the field of fisticuffs for a moment, and attune your shell-like ear to the singular story of the hat and the bed and me. However, don't get carried away to the extent of thinking of me as Kitty, or Kate, or any of the other diminutives of my last name, or I am quite likely to rap you smartly over the sconce with a stage brace. I much prefer, if you must be familiar, to be addressed by my usual sobriquet of Gentleman Johnny. However, I am just as happy when you call me Mr. Catherine. Just wanted to make myself perfectly clear. My profession is that of a stagehand. To continue our brief gander of my personal history and to orient you somewhat concerning myself, I've carried a card in the IATSE ever since the actors' strike, which more or less dates me. As a matter of fact, and strictly between you and I, me, there was a time when I entertained certain ambitions myself. When I left Rockford as a young man, valedictorian of my class at Rockford High, I studied with Christensen in Chicago for 4 months. Then the lamented Thomas Wood Stevens once said that I had legs like Bert Lytell's. And though I have devoted my energies to another phase of the theater for lo these many years, I am still able to offer slight competition to these young upstarts who people the stage today. Indeed, I very often linger after an evening performance to try my slightly decrepit wings alone in the house at midnight. Nay, I will win my wager better yet and show more signs of her obedience, her new-built virtue and obedience. See where she comes and brings your froward wives as prisoners to her womanly persuasion. Why, there's a wench. Come and kiss me, Kate. The Bard, Taming of the Shrew, Act 5, Scene 2, Patricio speaking to Catherine. I could go on for 3 days.
Before you go on for 3 days, Mr. Catherine, suppose you step over here and give these boys a hand with the scenery for the next act, huh? And make it snappy, Mr. Catherine? That a boy, Mr. Catherine.
Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt. Hamlet, Act 1, Scene 2.
John Catherine been telling you how he'd have wowed him in Grand Rapids if he'd stuck to his first love, the theater? Don't you listen to it. First thing you know, we'll have you talked into angeling a production of Shakespearean repertory in somebody's cow barn for the summer, starring John J. Catherine as King Lear, Macbeth, Shylock, and assorted King's Henry. And I'm not going to let anybody spoil the best stagehand I ever saw to make a fourth-rate ham actor out of him. Not that he isn't a fourth-rate ham actor already. Me? I'm Evelyn Pierce. I produce plays and things. And I think John J. Catherine hates my viscera. I don't mean to be mean to John. I like him. But we got work to do putting on a play. And that's the stagehand's business. Oh, hello, John. Back so quickly?
Miss Pierce, I quit.
Again, John?
For positively the last final definitive time, Miss Pierce, I quit. I am done. I resign. I will take it up with the union if need be, but I unequivocably, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Unequivocably resign. Is that clear, Miss Pierce?
Quite, John. But why, if you please?
That set dresser.
What set dresser?
That man, that unspeakable man that goes around putting things on things, flowers on tables and telephone books on stands, candlesticks on the mantel. He put my hat on the bed.
Oh.
And so, Miss Pierce, I...
Unequivocably resign.
It is so. Fare you well.
Where are you going, John?
I said I quit, Miss B.
Where are you going?
I am going to the mortician's. I am going, Miss Pierce, to the mortician's to talk over certain details.
Details of what, John?
A funeral, Miss Pierce.
A funeral, John?
My funeral, Miss Pierce.
I don't quite understand you, John.
Miss Pierce, are you unaware that a hat placed on a bed is a sure sign of death? Please omit the flowers, Miss Pierce.
I wish you people would... Oh, John Catherine.
Hello, Miss Pierce.
Aren't you dead, you?
No, ma'am. Did I wake you up?
As a matter of fact, you did, John. Is there something I can do for you?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Miss Pierce.
Well, what? I was taking a nap.
You were asleep?
I was. I'm tired.
I didn't get much sleep last night.
No?
Nor the night before, either. Sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve of care. Macbeth, Act 2, Scene 2.
Death Counterfeit, Act 2, Scene 3.
It scares me.
What scares you? Macbeth?
Sleep. I'm afraid to go to sleep. Oh, I'm so sleepy.
Well, can I do something for you, John?
I could tell you about my dream.
Well, John, really, I'm afraid.
So am I. Something's got to be done.
You want me to do something? You mean you want to come back to work, John?
I want to tell you about my dream, Miss Pierce.
Well, come on in.
Well, thank you.
Sit down, John.
Thank you.
Will I light a cigarette? Cigarette, John?
I don't smoke, Miss Pierce.
Oh, yes, I forgot. Well?
I hardly know where to begin.
I haven't got much time.
I know. Neither have I.
Go ahead, John.
Well, the hat, you know,
and the bed.
It's only a superstition, John.
That's what people say.
I didn't know you were superstitious.
Well, I don't know whether I am or not. I'm so sleepy all the time, I can't remember things. I don't know what... Oh, I don't know.
Now, see here, John.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm just afraid of dying. Are you afraid of dying, Miss Pierce?
I've never thought of it specially.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to die. You see, I know what it's like. Kind of.
Now, John, if that's all...
Now, listen. I was really scared when I left the theater last night. I really did call up a mortician to arrange things, you know.
You said you were.
I couldn't get him on the phone. So after a while, I lay down as one who wraps the drapery of his couch about him.
And lies down to peaceful dreams, Thanatopsis, William Cullen Bryant.
Yeah, thank you. But I didn't dream, peacefully or unpeacefully.
But you said you did.
No, ma'am, I just went to sleep.
But you said you dreamed, John. You said you wanted to tell me your dream. That's what you said.
I know. When I woke up, it was real late. Really late, I mean. Very late. It was dark. Black dark. I could hardly see the light from the window. Couldn't see it at all, as a matter of fact. Black dark, and I was so thirsty. I had to have a drink of water. My mouth was just parched.
Sleeping with your mouth open.
I suppose. Well, after a while, I couldn't stand it any longer, so I got up. Now, the bathroom's here, you see. My bed is like this, and the dresser's over here. And there's a chair.
Mm-hmm.
I got up, and I couldn't find the light switch. I knew I could find my way in the dark to the bathroom, all right, and I did. I got my drink of water, and my goodness, it tasted good. And then I started back to bed. When I came back, the bed was gone. There wasn't any bed. There wasn't any chair where I knew the chair was. And the dresser was gone, too. There wasn't anything in the room.
John, you were dreaming.
No, I wasn't dreaming. I wandered around there in the dark for ever so long. There wasn't anything in the room, I tell you. My gracious, Miss Pierce, I can walk 3 steps from my bathroom door right to the edge of my bed. It's a little low bed. I bump it with my knee. It's a little room, Miss Pierce. You can't walk around there in the light without bumping into something. The chair or the dresser or the bed or the little table. I forgot where I keep my collected plays of Shakespeare, right kind of by my bed. Where the light is. I couldn't find the light. I couldn't find any light.
And I don't understand it, John.
Because of the hat on the bed.
Oh, John.
That's right.
That's because you had a bad dream.
It wasn't a dream.
You said you wanted to tell me your dream.
The only way I could think to describe it. But it wasn't a dream, just a big empty place. Dark, black dark, empty. I've been very badly frightened, Miss Pierce.
What happened when you waked up, John?
I wasn't asleep. It wasn't a dream. It was a kind of preview of death, Miss Pierce.
Oh, no, John, a dream. Now, don't sit there and shake your head, John. I've had dreams like that myself. Extraordinarily vivid dreams that leave me wondering when I wake up whether I... John, you're not listening to me.
Oh, I'm so sleepy, Miss Pierce.
Well, you're not going to sleep in my house now.
I won't go to sleep, Miss Pierce. I'm afraid to go to sleep.
Afraid of dreaming?
I don't know what I'm afraid of.
Well, cigarette, John?
I don't smoke, Miss Pierce.
I forgot.
It's all right.
Well... It is an extraordinary experience, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, well, why'd you come to tell me about it? Did you... I mean, I'll be glad to have you go back to work if you want to. You want to do that?
No, I don't think so. I just wanted to tell you about it.
Why, me especially, John?
Oh, gracious, don't you know?
John, I'm very flattered, really, and you know, but...
You don't know?
Of course not.
You were there.
I was there?
Yes, Miss Pierce.
I've never heard anything so absurd in all my life. What was I doing there?
In the dark? What were you doing? Why, I don't know what you were doing. You were
just there.
Now, John, that's absurd. How do you know I was there? You said it was dark. You couldn't see anything.
You were there, Miss Pierce.
John, I don't know what you're talking about. You're drunk or...
I don't drink, Miss Pierce.
And I wasn't at your house either. You know perfectly well I was.
It wasn't at my house.
You said...
I said I came out of the bathroom and I thought it was my room. But it wasn't. It was just a great big dark empty space.
John, when was all this?
Why, last night.
Oh.
I went right home from the theater, you know, and I went to bed like I...
When you saw the hat on the bed and you came to me and said you quit?
Of course. Last night, I...
John.
Yes, ma'am.
It was Thursday night you quit.
What?
3 days ago, not last night. 3 days ago, John.
3 days ago?
Where have you been for 3 days, John?
Why, I... Yes, I've been dead.
John, I think you better get the... What are you staring at?
Miss Pierce, you... You got your hat on the bed.
All right, John, come on.
Come on, where?
I'm going to take my hat off the bed, John.
It's too late now.
Too late?
Sign it, Dad.
Oh, stop that nonsense. I'm going to put on my hat and get back to the theater. That play I'm trying to do will die the death.
Don't talk that way.
Stop it. Come on. You go back with me. Go back to work if you want to. Now, you see? See, I've got my hat. Now, let's go. Time to go, John.
Something will happen to us, Miss Pierce.
What? Get run over by a taxi?
Don't talk that way.
Oh, stop it, Catherine.
Miss Pierce? You know I don't like to be called by my last name.
Sometimes I'm not sure whether that's your last name or your first.
You're not to talk to me that way, Miss Pierce.
All right, then. Stop acting like an old maid and come along if you
want. I don't want you talking to me like
that. All right, just stop talking nonsense, then, and come on with me. Coming? I said, are you coming with me?
No, I'm not coming.
Son, I've got
you. You're not going either.
Now, look, this is silly. Why aren't you?
I'm afraid.
Well, you're not going to stay here.
Please.
No, come on. Now, get up and come with me.
Don't you go either.
John, are you all right?
I'm afraid.
What am I going to do with you?
The hat on the bed, that was a sign of death for me, and I died a little the other night, whenever it was.
You had a bad dream.
And now your hat was on the bed. That's a sign of death for you.
That's ridiculous.
You're going to die.
Now, John, I've listened to just about everything I'm going to listen to. You just get up out of that chair and come on.
No.
Yes.
Please.
John, would you like it if I left you here?
No.
Look, John, it's 2:30, and I've got to be at the theater at 3. Here, I'll put this nice pillow under your head. Won't that be nice and comfortable, John?
So sleepy.
Sure, Johnny Captain. You'll be all right. You just stay there nice in the big chair, and I'll go to the theater, and then I'll come back. You'll see.
Don't get killed.
Of course I won't. I'll be all right, Johnny Captain. And you'll be all right, too, right here. Go on. Go to sleep, John.
I'm afraid to go to sleep.
Poor guy's all worn out.
I'm afraid.
Well, you sleep, boy. I'll be back around 10:00. John. Good heavens, it's 2:45 already. Oh, darn, I won't answer it. Oh, I'm late already, I tell you. All right, all right, all right. Yes. Oh, hello, Tony. Yes, I'm on my way to the theater. I haven't got a minute to talk. Yes, yes. Yes, I'll be home about 10, I hope. Matter of fact, I think you better. I'll tell you when I see you. Yes, here at the house. Well, I might have somebody I want you to get rid of. Wait. No, he's asleep. No, I'm not living a life of sin. This is one of the stagehands from the John J. Catherine, no less. That's right, the distinguished Shakespearean actor and quoter. I don't know, potted, I think, or else he's losing his buttons. Too much King Lear, I guess. Oh, no, I'm leaving him here to sleep it off. Oh, hats on a bed, all that stuff. Oh, he's all right now, as long as I'm not here. Look, Tony, I'm late. Suppose you meet me here at the house around 10. Sure. If he's still here, I'll let you throw him out. I'm going to run. Goodbye. I'll see you tonight. Bye. You all right, John Cassidy? You asleep? John? Poor fellow.
Oh, Mr. Sauce. Oh, I'm so thirsty. What time is it? Quarter to... I can't read my watch. Where's all the lights? Oh, where do I get a drink of water? Oh, tank left in the blankets. Hey, where's Miss Pierce? Miss Pierce! Trussed up hand and foot like a fowl, like a pullet, like a capon. Miss Pierce! Oh, yes, she went out. What am I doing here? Oh, I remember. My gracious, I have to get out of here before she comes back. My mouth, I shouldn't have had those cocktails before I came over here. I should know I can't drink. What I need is a big, cold drink of water. Nice place you got here, Miss Pierce. Nice place you got, although I can't say I like philodendrons. Where's your kitchen? I want a drink of water. I wish I could find a light. Here it is. Oh, 11:45 it is. I better be getting out of here after I get a drink. Kitchen. Mighty little kitchen. Nice little kitchen. Now, where's the glass? There, we have glasses. Oh, man. Nothing like cold water. Thank you, Miss Pierce. Thank you very much, Miss Pierce. I find your drinking water excellent, although it could be just a spot colder. Miss Pierce, I dislike you intensely. I do not love thee, Dr. Fell, a reason why I cannot tell, but this I know and know full well I do not love thee, Miss Pierce. Although the why is not in my mind, in the mind of John J. Catherine, my friends, who might be the idol of millions, nay, billions, if Miss Evelyn Pierce, the eminent producer, would give him a chance to tread the boards. Tread the boards in sock and buskin. Hand me my sock, Violet. I prithee trust my points, and I will reward thee with a cup of sack. Cup of sack, sack of cups. Trust my points, whatever that is, Wanda, and I will reward thee with a cup of sack. Yeah, Sir Walter Scott must have been a little stiff when he wrote that. Thou hast looked upon the wine when it is red, Sir Walter. Thou hast looked upon it when it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adding machine. Yeah, thou art very funny this night, Sir John J. Catherine. Albeit a trifle corny, sirrah. I've got to get my large, bulky carcass out of here before Miss Pierce comes back, or else Miss Pierce and I will get in a fight, and then I won't get my job back. Much less get a job as a broad cheddar in sock and buskin. Remind me to ask Miss Pierce what is a buskin. I know what a sock is, Miss Pierce. A sock is what I'm going to give you in your pearly teeth if you don't stop being so mean to me, to Sir John J. Catherine, the sock and buskin man from Rockford, Illinois. He had not to mention, forsooth, Bassanio, my head hangeth over. I am now undrunk. Well, they would, my fair and fair and middling friend, I would that thou would spiel to me whether this beldame had perchance a small flagon of bourbon concealed on or about the premises. For I would drink of same and restore myself. Anon. Is there no way, as Pierre Louis has the little girl say to Demetrius? Is there no bourbon? What drinkest thou, Pierce? No scotch, no creme vet? No vintage wine, no. Aha! I see you, John Jameson's excellent pot still product, of which our Miss Pierce will miss not a jot or a tittle out of a bottle which I will tipple. Thank you, Miss Pierce. You have a regrettable habit of leaving hats on beds. But here's to you. That is meat and drink, not to mention pie in the sky. Je vous remercie, Miss Pierce. No, Mademoiselle Pierce, our hero remarked in his flawless flinch. Thank you. I will have another dollar for the same, Miss Pierce, you undelightful old bag, old sack, old cover sack. Arigato, Pierson, he remarked in flawless Japanese. And for this short snort, which will cure my hangover completely. Short. I will say in my flawless double talk, Framus on the Scrivene. Now, I will replace the somewhat attenuated bottle from which I have received back my body and my soul, reading from left to right. And before I retire into the stilly night, I will favor this large and intelligent audience with a selection from the Bard. Not Ben Bard, he is a comic. The Bard of Avon, situate by an odd coincidence hard by the banks of the River Stratford, or vice versa, as the case may be in sunny England, which I will favor you with a large, jagged hunk of Shakespeare. Or as my ancient and deceased friend, what was his name in the shops of many, many years ago, was wont to say, Shakespeare. Russian for Shakespeare. I crave your attention. Mr. John J. Catherine as Macbeth. Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle toward my hand? Come, let me clutch thee. I have thee not, and yet I see thee still. Art thou not fatal vision, sensible to feeling as to sight? Or art thou but a dagger of the mind, a false creation proceeding from the heat-oppressed brain? I see thee yet in form as palpable as this which now I draw. The lights went out. Where's the lights? Miss Pierce, turn on the lights. Miss Pierce isn't here. Where's Miss Pierce? Yeah, I'm going to get out of here, Miss Pierce. You come in your nice house in the dark, find me here all full of your liquor. Here, yeah, where's the door? I can't find the door. I can't find... Where's the chair? Where's the door? Miss Pierce! Please, Miss Pierce! I'm lost again in the dark. Miss Pierce, this happened again. You did it to me this time, Miss Pierce. You put your hat on the bed and you made it dark in your house, too. Miss Pierce, I'm lost. This is no dream. Miss Pierce, where are you? Where am I? Where's the door? Here's the door. Where does it go? I know where this door goes. This is the door. Miss Pierce, where does this door go? No. Where did it? You went and you put your hat on the bed. You did. You put your hat on the bed. You put your hat on the bed. That's a sign of death, Miss Pierce, putting a hat on the bed. Where? Well, I can't see. Oh, I know where I am now. Oh, I was so scared. Never mind, Miss Pierce. I know where I am now. Here's a chair. Hello, chair. Here's a little table. Good evening, little table in the dark. I beg your pardon, table. And I'm all right now, Miss Pierce. I'll get out just as soon as I can find the door in the dark, Miss Pierce. Oh, how I hate Miss Pierce. There, I'm going. Oh, here's the bed, isn't it? The bed, yes. The bed, Miss Pierce. That's where you threw your hat. Hat on the bed. Sign of death, old Pierce. I guess I'll just lie down and take me a little rest. Why, your hat's still here on the bed, Miss Pierce. Sign of death, Miss Pierce, leaving your hat on the bed. Sign of death for sure. Silly old Miss Pierce, leaving your hat on the bed. Why, Miss Pierce, you left your head inside your hat.
Tonight's Quiet Please story is The Hat, The Bed, and John J. Catherine. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And Miss Pierce was played by Nancy Sheridan. As usual, music for Quiet Please is by Albert Berman.
A listening reminder. A united America makes a strong America. That's why each of us should work to rid our community of racial and religious prejudice. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
I know. Another break. What can I do? It's a promise to come back soon. Up next is The Earthman from Escape, for July the 25th of 1951. Before we get into that, though, I think I'll take a couple of minutes to mention here. Escape adapted two stories from Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles, which, if you don't know, and I think pretty much everybody knows, is a collection of short stories about the colonization of Mars, published in 1950. As I said, Escape adapted two of the stories from this book. One was Mars is Heaven, and the other is The Earthman, which is tonight's presentation. The Earthman was first published in Thrilling Wonder Stories for August of 1948, and appears in the Martian Chronicles under the same name. A while back, on Show 8, I ran X-1's adaptation of Mars is Heaven, and I think next week I'll play the Escape version of that. So you may want to come back for that. By the way, don't expect this adaptation to be all that faithful. Still, overall, it's pretty good.
Finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to the outer limits of space and the terrifying experiences of four men who penetrated it. As Ray Bradbury, famous science fiction writer, tells it in his gripping story, The Earthmen.
You ready, Clitheroe?
Yes.
Communication number one. Mission accomplished.
Yes, sir.
You better make sure you pause after that. Give them a few seconds to get over their excitement down there.
They'll go crazy. Be bigger than New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve? Be bigger than the armistice. Only one celebration will top it in our lifetime.
What's that?
The one they throw when we get back. All right, now where was I?
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. First rocket expedition to Mars landed upon Mars 1203 Earth time. Estimated position of landing approximately longitude 345 degrees, latitude minus 7 degrees.
Okay.
Landed without incident at edge of forest. Atmosphere, what's a good word to say it's all right for breathing?
Optimal?
Sound atmosphere optimal. Descended from rock.
Captain Williams.
Yeah?
Prestice, I see Prestice. He's running this way.
Running something after him?
No, he's just walking along. I think he's smoking.
Keep your binoculars on him. Sound off. It looks like he's in trouble. Descended from rocket. Sent Lieutenant Prescott on reconnaissance mission. Dugan, Prescott all right?
Yes, sir. Want me to yell to him?
No, just stay up there and watch him. Morale high. Commend efficiency and discipline of entire crew. Lieutenant Prescott and Dugan, Sergeant Clitheroe.
Thanks, Captain.
There's enough worry for all, Sergeant. Any chance of sending that in now?
Not for 2 hours. Channels won't be clear for voice communication until 3 o'clock Earth time.
They don't even know yet we made it. I'd like to be down there when they get that message. You see what excitement. Sirens, bands, playing, artillery salute.
Hey, hit Prescott, sir.
Good. Come on down, Dugan. Prescott, you all right?
People!
Here, sit down. Catch your breath.
People! Mars has people!
All right, now take your time. You want a drink?
Mars is inhabited. People, just like home.
Any women?
Let him talk. What sort of people?
Ordinary-looking people. Men, women, kids.
Hostile?
I don't think so. I came down a road, a country road, followed it to the right angle into a paved highway.
Yeah.
Before I could decide whether to go right or left, I heard a buzzing sort of sound. I ducked behind a bush. Vehicle rolled past. One wheel.
Must have a gyroscopic balance of some sort.
Yeah, yeah.
Inside was a man and a woman.
What'd they look like?
Just like us. Hair, eyes, nose, mouth, body, clothes,
everything. Mars inhabited. Wait till you hear that down there.
As it passed, I followed it. I came to a hill. When I got to the top, there it was, a little town. Buildings, streets, just like home. Then I hurried back here.
People. And just like home, huh?
Yeah.
You suppose they're really friendly? Well, I don't see why not. You heard what he said? Civilization up here resembles the one down there. What would they do on Earth if Martians came down and established contact? It'd make a pretty big thing out of it. Now, the people up here will probably treat us the same way. Even so, we're not going to take any chances. We'll be armed.
We're going into town?
Right. As soon as we camouflage the rocket. I start cutting some of those branches and gathering leaves. Covered up good. I don't want anybody monkeying around while we're gone.
Right.
We can't be gone long, Captain. Channel's open at 3.
We'll be back by then, if everything goes well.
Oh, can you imagine their reaction when they see us? Come on, men, make it fast! All right, men, drift up. I'm going to knock on the door now and keep smiling to show we're friendly and let me do all the talking. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Yes, what do you want?
You speak English.
I speak what I speak. What do you want?
Martian speaks English. We're from Earth. I'm Captain Williams, commander of the first expedition to Mars. And you are the first Martian we've met.
Martian?
What I mean to say is you live on the fourth planet from the sun, correct?
Well, everybody knows that.
Well, we're from Earth.
Where?
It's never been done before.
What hasn't?
How is it you speak such good English?
I'm not speaking, I'm thinking. Telepathy. Now, what is it you want?
We're from Earth.
From Earth. Some other time, Mac. I got my own problem.
How do you like that?
He doesn't look very bright.
I know, but...
Well, try it again. Knock on the door.
I'm in command here, Dugan. I'll do all the thinking.
Yes, sir.
I'll knock on the door and try it again.
Yes?
Oh, excuse me, ma'am. Was that your husband I was just talking to?
Yes.
He shut the door so quick I never got a chance to explain.
Oh, I'm sorry, but he is busy. Can I help you? Are you strangers in town?
I'll say we are. We're from Earth.
Earth?
The planet Earth. Maybe you have a different name for it. The third in order from the sun. We came in a rocket. Almost 60 million miles.
Don't come near me.
I just want as you can. You and your husband are the first people on this planet we've
seen. Don't come near me!
Don't understand. We're from Earth. We came in a rocket. We came in a rocket.
Ah! 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 Ah!
What did I do,
Captain? Don't you think we'd better get away from here, maybe?
Well, all I did was.
How far is it to town, Brett?
Quarter of a mile.
I just wanted to shake hands.
What was it that scared you?
All right, first the smoke, Captain?
Sure, smoke, yell, unbutton your buttons, do whatever you want. Doesn't seem to make any difference. Nobody's paying any attention to us anyhow. You'd think these people had visitors from Earth every day. Nobody even turns around to look at us.
Can I say something, Captain?
Yeah.
We can't blame them for ignoring us, sir. We look just the same as they do. For all they know, we're just a few Martians ambling through the town square. We ought to take a chance and try telling someone else.
We've told 3 of them already. Back at that farmhouse, a man ignored us and a woman screamed and ran away. And that girl we told fainted.
Captain. Looks like a bar or a soda fountain in here. Would it be all right if we went in and had something to drink?
Well, why not?
Can
Afternoon. Good afternoon. Could we get something to drink here?
Got some nice fruit crystal. It's all right. The same for everyone.
Sorry, Tom. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen you fellas around. You strangers?
We're from Earth.
Where?
Earth. Third planet from the sun.
Oh. Clumsy of me. Earth, huh? Well,
what do you know? You mean you understand what I'm trying to tell you?
Sure. Sure.
That we're the first men from Earth ever to reach Mars, that it's never been done before? That we came 60 million miles in a rocket?
Sure, sure. 60 million, huh? Rocket, you say? Well, I'm proud to make your acquaintance.
I'm Captain Williams. This is Lieutenant Prescott, Sergeant Clitheroe, and Lieutenant Duke.
Well, I'm honored. Do you mind if I bring my son in to meet you? This is an occasion.
Sure. Bring him in.
Son? Come in here. Rocket, eh? All the way by rocket. Say now.
You understand what we went through, the chances we took.
Sure. Why, you're real heroes. Let me shake hands again. Son, these men are from Earth. From Earth. Understand?
Yes, Pop.
We're the first men from Earth ever to reach Mars.
Isn't that wonderful, son? Think of it.
It's wonderful.
Go tell everyone. You don't mind if he tells people, do you?
Mind?
I should say not.
Oh, we'd like him to.
As many as possible.
Go ahead, son. Hurry. Think of it. All the way from Earth.
There were times in there when I didn't think we'd make it, I can tell you.
Hey, I'll bet there were.
Turbine conked out when we hit the stratosphere. I began to sweat a big drop.
Yeah, I can imagine. Turbine, it's pretty serious.
Well, even before we left, we were told we only had about one chance in three of making it.
Hey, I don't see where you found the courage.
We didn't even know what we'd find when we got here.
My,
you
oh
see,
my.
It's never been done before. Never.
Let me shake your hand again.
Lots of men were killed trying, but they never succeeded.
What an honor for our little town.
You're the first to know, really. The very first.
Oh?
Your name will go down in history of all the school books with ours.
Right. A monument on both planets.
Hey, what is your name?
Hey, wait a minute, man. Hold on.
What's up, Skipper?
Outside. All those people. Looks like the whole town.
Right. They must have heard the news, the glorious news from my son. Yes, they've come to welcome you.
Hey, hold your fire, men. Welcome us. It doesn't sound like he'd come to welcome us.
Hello. You?
What? That's the man we first spoke to, the one whose wife got scared.
Gentlemen, please don't shoot. There must be some mistake. I'll just ask them why they're behaving in such a...
Here, come back here. Come back here, you old... Come back here. What do you make of that?
Captain, I don't understand this and I don't like it.
Do the back way out. See if it's clear. Prescott, you fire when I say fire, not before a lawyer got. They're all around us, Captain. You make a break for it. One volley at my command.
Captain Williams.
Yeah?
Look, there's a little guy out there giving them all what for. They're starting to disperse.
Let me see.
300 square immediately. Immediately, I say. Go on now. Go on, all of you. Go on home.
He's coming in. Now, I'll do all the talking. Put your guns away, but stay on your toes. Dugan, let's keep our eye on the back, huh?
Gentlemen. May I apologize for the unforgivable actions of my fellow townspeople. They've acted barbarously. Barbarously.
We didn't do a thing. We were as friendly as we could be.
But they're ignorant. Ignorant. Just ignorant. No reverence for science. None whatever.
We're yes. From Earth. Did they tell you?
Oh, yes. A great honor, sir. This is without a doubt the most memorable moment of my life. As a man of science, I greet you.
What have we done to make them so hostile?
Well, please put it out of your thoughts. They are both idiots. Simply because two women were stupid enough to be frightened. These are my apologies, my sincere apologies. Believe me, sir, I would never have forgiven them if they had harmed so much as a hair of your head. It's a scientific marvel, and they would do you harm. It's unforgivable. Oh, we're wasting time. The members of the Institute are waiting.
Institute?
The Institute of Science. We have sole jurisdiction in such matters. The members have already been informed and are eagerly awaiting your appearance. It will cause a sensation.
Well, that's a little more like it.
This way, if you please. I have transportation waiting. And have no fear of these rustics. You're in my care now.
I'm Captain Williams, sir. Who are you?
I'm president of the Institute. My name is Dr. Booth. This way, gentlemen. This way. In here, Captain Williams. Go right in, please.
I won't make a speech, you understand. Just a few informal remarks.
The members of the Institute will listen to you with the greatest interest, no matter how informal your remarks. Go right in and make yourself at home.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll keep it short. We have to be back at our rocket by 3 o'clock our time in order to...
To communicate with Earth. Yes, you told me. Yes. Go right in. I'll join you very soon.
Thank you. After you, men.
He's a nice fella.
Wow. What an auditorium.
Yeah. Must be hundreds of people. Wonder how they managed to get them together at such short notice.
Straighten up, men. They're looking at us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am Mr. Earl.
And I'm Captain Jonathan Williams of New York City. On Earth.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, one and all, on behalf of myself and my crew. Thank you.
It's good to see another man from Earth. I am from Earth also.
How was that again?
There are many of us here from Earth.
You? From Earth?
Yes.
But is that possible? Did you come by rocket? Has space travel been going on for centuries? What country are you from?
Tuwerial. I came by the spirit of my body years ago.
Tuwerial? I never heard of it. What was that about the spirit of your body?
What do you mean there are many of us here from Earth?
Not only from Earth. He's from Jupiter. He's from Saturn.
Jupiter? Saturn? Wait a minute, this is confusing. Where on Earth is this Tuwerial?
Tuwerial?
Is it near America?
America? What is America?
You never heard of America?
No.
You say you're from Earth and you never heard of America?
Earth is a place of seas and nothing but seas. There is no land. I am from Earth, and I know.
Earth is a place of all jungle. I am from Orion Earth, a civilization built of silver.
Silver? Men, come over here a second. Do you realize what this is?
What, sir?
This is no celebration. These aren't members of the Institute. This isn't a banquet or a surprise party.
Huh?
Look at their eyes. Listen to them. Now I understand why the woman screamed, why the girl fainted, why the old boy in the soda fountain ran out on us, why the crowd was hostile, why they brought us here.
Where are we, sir?
In an insane asylum. They think we're crazy. Clitheroe, try the door again. I just tried it, Captain. It's still locked.
Go right in, gentlemen. The members of the Institute will listen to you with the greatest interest, no matter how informal your remarks.
I'll bet they've been listening, all right.
I bet they've had us under observation ever since we entered this building.
Captain, look.
What?
You ought to take a look. That woman who said she was from Earth, too. Blue flame is coming out of her mouth and then turning into the shape of a small naked child.
You think that's something? I've been watching one of them change into a crystal pillar, and then into a golden statue, and then into a staff of cedar, and then back into a woman again. Never saw anything like that. Magicians.
No, not magicians. Those are hallucinations. They pass their insanity over into us, and we see their hallucinations too. Telepathy, auto-suggestion, and telepathy.
Well, look, Captain,
if hallucinations can appear this real to us, to anyone, if hallucinations are catching and almost believable, it's no wonder they took us for psychotics. If that woman can produce little blue fire children and that one can change into a pillar, how natural if normal Martians think we can produce our rocket ship with our minds.
I've been thinking along those lines, too. If someone came up to you on Earth and said he was from Mars, just came in by rocket, wouldn't you think he was crazy?
I would. Heaven help me, I would.
What time is it?
2:35. The channel's open in 25 minutes.
Where's that doctor? Where's that doctor? I said, where's that doctor?
I'm here, sir.
I demand our release. I demand an apology for this outrage. My government will certainly hear of this. All the governments of Earth will hear of it. I shall tell them of the indignities heaped upon their representatives.
Yes, yes, of course.
Don't humor me! Are you going to release us, or must I take steps?
What sort of steps?
I'll kill you.
That's very interesting. Excuse me a moment. Dr. O.
Yes, doctor.
Did you call me, doctor?
The case is developing along classic lines. I thought you might be interested. He's just threatened to kill me. Proceed, please, Ken.
I wasn't joking, I tell you. Are you going to stand aside?
No.
All right. Jan.
Most interesting. What do you suppose the next phase will be?
A denial of insanity. Reaffirmation of sanity.
But we are sane. We are.
You see?
Classic men try to think of something. He thinks we're insane and he won't understand that we're not.
No, not at all. I do not think
all of you are insane.
Oh, no. Just you, sir. The others, the ones you persist in referring to as your crew, they do not exist. They are secondary hallucinations.
Secondary?
Hallucinations.
But you can touch them. You can hear them. Go ahead and touch them.
It doesn't prove nothing. The patients have come to me with snakes crawling from their ears. When I cured them, their snakes vanished.
We'll be glad to be cured. Go ahead.
It's unusual. Not many want to be cured. The cure is drastic, you know.
Cure ahead. I'm confident you'll find we're all sane.
He persists in referring to the others.
Oh, they never stop. You know, Captain, such cases as yours need special treatment. The others in this hall are simpler forms, but once a patient has deteriorated as much as you have with primary, secondary, tertiary, auditory, olfactory, and lingual delusions, as well as tactile and optical fantasies, that's a pretty bad business. We may have to resort to euthanasia.
Euthanasia? You're crazy! Now, listen. My crew and I left Earth 3 days ago in a rocket. We landed here in Mars.
Yes, you've already told me, Captain. Most detailed dream fantasy I've ever heard.
But I can show you the rocket ship!
Can you manifest it in this hall?
No, certainly. It's over there on the corner.
I don't see.
Of course you don't. It's not there.
Why did you tell me to look if the rocket isn't there?
I was joking, idiot. Joking!
Really? You have an odd sense of humor.
If you give us transportation and come with us, I can show you the rocket. It's in a small forest near that town where we first saw you.
Be rather interesting to observe his reaction at the failure to show it to
him. Yes. Would you care to accompany me, Dr. O?
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Very well, Captain. Lead us to your rocket.
Here it is. Here's the rocket. Now are you satisfied? Now are you convinced?
I see nothing resembling a rocket.
Lugan, Prescott, Clitheroe, clear away the camouflage. Yes. Hurry!
Right,
you'll see, Doctor. You'll see. Hi there. There. Okay, man, that's enough. There you are, Doctor. That's the main hatch. Now, are you convinced?
Wonderful manifestation. Wonderful. But like the manifestation of your gun when you threatened to kill me, they're completely unreal and non-functional.
Well, I've been thinking about why your gun jammed, Captain. I think it's a change in atmosphere.
I suppose he allows his hallucinatory companion to offer the rational because the reality is too painful for him to offer it himself.
That is precisely, Doctor.
It's a rocket. It's a real rocket. See? I can touch it.
May we look inside?
I insist that you look inside.
Come along, Dr. Lowe. This is one of the most...
Captain, it's 3 minutes of three. If we can keep them here until they open the channels, they'll be able to hear the reaction to our report on Earth, and then we'll be able to...
I know. What a suspicious bunch of rollouts.
2 cents I'd tell the people back home not to bother with Mars.
Fascinating.
I've never seen anything like it.
No, and now do you believe? Well, this is the most incredible example of sensual hallucination and hypnotic suggestion I've ever encountered. We went through your rocket, as you call it. I tapped it, and I heard it. Auditory fantasy. I smelled it. Olfactory hallucination induced by sensual telepathy. I could even taste it. Lingual fantasy. Allow me to shake your hand, sir, and congratulate you. You are a psychotic genius. You have done the most complete job, either task of projecting your psychotic image life into the mind of another via telepathy and keeping the hallucinations from becoming sensually weaker is almost impossible. Those people in the house usually concentrate on visuals, or at the most visual and auditory fantasies combined.
But you, Captain, have balanced the whole conglomeration. Your insanity is beautifully complete.
My insanity?
Yes, yes. What a lovely insanity.
Metal, rubber, food, clothing, fuel, nuts, bolts, 10,000 separate items we've checked on your vessels. Never have we seen such complexity.
Why, there were even shadows under the bunks and under everything.
Such a concentration of will. Let me embrace you, sir. I'll write this into my greatest monograph. I'll speak of it at the Martian Institute next month.
Doctor, he's incurable, of course.
Of course. You poor, wonderful man. You'll be much happier dead.
What?
Have you any last word?
Wait. No, don't you!
You poor, sad creature. I'm afraid you are far beyond any psychiatric therapy. You're an incurable case.
No.
I shall put you out of this misery which has driven you to imagine this rocket and these three men.
I did not.
It will be most engrossing to watch your three friends and your rocket vanish once I've killed them.
Doctor.
And then I will write a paper on the dissolution of neurotic images from what I observed here today.
I'm from Earth. My name is Jonathan Williams, and these men are...
Yes, yes. I know.
From Earth.
Captain Williams.
They continue to exist. Superb. Hallucinations with time and spatial existence. I wonder how they will react to a bullet.
Oh no.
Put on a gun.
No.
An auditory appeal. Even with a patient dead.
Run.
They still exist. And so does the rocket.
Phenomenal. Such persistence of the psychosis. First time I've ever observed it post-mortem. But it will fade. It will all fade. Interesting, wasn't it? Well, shall we be returning to the Institute?
I should like you to explain certain aspects of the case to the members of my department.
Oh, gladly, my boy, gladly. You see,
Earth to Mars, calling rocket expedition. Calling rocket expedition. Do you read me? Do you read me? Come in, Captain Williams. Come in, Captain Williams. Earth to Mars. Earth to Mars.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you The Earthman by Ray Bradbury, especially adapted for Escape by Walter Newman, starring Parley Bear with Harry Bartell, Hans Conried, Larry Dobkin, and Lou Krugman. Featured in the cast were John Daner, Sidney Miller, Georgia Ellis, Jack Crucian, and Byron Kane.
The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
And another break. Hopefully this will be the last one. Well, I think that marks two pretty good ones in a row, don't you? I mean, yeah, I know the sound quality wasn't what I would have liked it to be, but I think they were worth hearing anyway, weren't they? If you have a different opinion, let me know.
From Hollywood, Barry Sullivan in The Unexpected.
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected. Life is filled with the unexpected. Happy, romantic, tragic, and mysterious endings to our most ordinary actions. Dreams come true, or dreams are shattered by sudden twists of fate in The Unexpected. Who knows what drama may happen tomorrow, or an hour from now, or in just a moment? Who knows what destiny has in store for the lady down the street, the fellow at the next desk, or you, yourself? Who knows? Listen for just a moment for The Unexpected.
And that's why I recommend Blue Coal, for Blue Coal is America's finest hard coal, and no doubt about it. You see, Blue Coal comes from the very heart of Pennsylvania's richest anthracite region, mined deep down in the earth, where only the best hard coal is found. Consequently, Blue Coal distributes a steady flow of even-burning, long-lasting, healthful heat from cellar to attic. Yes, a Blue Coal fire will keep you warm and comfortable and help safeguard your family against colds caused by chilly or underheated rooms. So fill your bin with Blue Coal. And when ordering, ask your dealer about the Blue Coal Automatic Heat Regulator. It controls the heat in your home by automatically opening and closing furnace dampers. Yes, Blue Coal and a Blue Coal Heat Regulator working together make the modern combination for real comfort and real economy. This is part of the Blue Coal plan for better heat at less cost. Give your neighborhood dealer a call tomorrow. His name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the words Blue Coal.
And now, Mr. Barry Sullivan, outstanding motion picture and stage star in a drama of the unexpected titled Mercy Killing.
My name is Arnold Stanton. I'm a salesman, a successful one. I live in a little frame house on a shady street out in the suburbs. I've been married for 12 years. All our friends say that Evelyn and I are an ideal couple, devoted to each other. But a few minutes ago, as I came through the front door, I decided to murder my wife.
Is that you, Arnold? You're a little late tonight, aren't you? You missed the bus. You're usually here by 6 and it's 5 after.
Yeah.
Oh, you look tired, darling. I think you've been working too hard lately. You really need a rest or you'll be ill one of these days. And I don't know what I'd do if anything should happen to you. But we won't ever talk about that, will we, dear? Now, you just sit down here and rest. That's what you need, rest.
Yes, I need a rest. A rest from Evelyn. Sometimes I hate her. Sometimes I'd like to take her throat in my hands and... It's always, darling, what did you do today? And, Arnold, what shall we have for dinner? Why, she can't even get her hair fixed without asking me first. I can't stand it. From morning till night, day after day, she hasn't a thought of her own. She's not a real person. No, she's nothing but a parasite feeding on my spirit. If I could leave her. No. Why, if I mentioned the word divorce, she'd have hysterics for a week. I couldn't break a heart like that. Leaving Evelyn would be worse than killing her. Yes. Killing her. But how? It's should be a simple crime. An accident, that's it. It's got to look accidental. A fall, that's logical enough. A fall on the stairs. No, no, in the bathtub and then... But not tonight. Tomorrow morning. Everyone knows she sleeps late. I'll ask her to get up early. No one will suspect. And then the first thing tomorrow morning...
Evelyn. You awake, Evelyn? She's gone. She downstairs already? Am I too late?
That you, darling? I got up early like you asked me to. I'm all ready for the tub, and I'll have breakfast ready before you get dressed.
Don't hurry. There's plenty of time.
Now, I don't want you to be late because of me. I wouldn't want people to say that I wasn't a dependable wife. Oh, Arnold, don't touch me. The tub is slippery, and I might fall. Arnold, you're pushing me. Don't!
Everything seems very normal. The office, Miss Roberts, very normal. And Evelyn is dead and I'm safe. They can't have found her yet. They'll call me as soon as they do. Shouldn't be much longer. I wonder who will find the body. Probably it'll be that Mrs. Bronson down the street. Yes, Mrs. Bronson. She's the likeliest. No, she wouldn't. She wouldn't call the police. She doesn't know anything is wrong. She'd think Evelyn was out shopping or something. Then... tonight, when I come home, I'd have to find her. Oh, no, I don't want that. I don't want to go back into that bathroom. But I won't have to. I'll get a call any moment now. Anyway, by the time I'm back from lunch, everything will be all right then.
Did you have a nice lunch, Mr. Stanton?
Oh, you know how restaurants are these days. Any messages while I was out?
No, sir, not a thing.
Nothing at all?
No. Were you expecting something in particular?
No, just wondered. Well, I'll be in my office if you should need me. They would have called if they'd found her. I'd be notified right away unless something went wrong. Come in.
I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Stanton. I forgot to tell you when you just asked.
Yes?
There was a message for you. I don't know how I could have overlooked it. It was right on my pad.
What was it, Miss Roberts?
Oh, nothing urgent or anything like that.
What was the message?
It was from your wife. She's playing bridge and may be late getting home this evening. She didn't want you to worry about her.
I...
Is something wrong? I'm sorry, I forgot.
No, nothing at all. Thank you, Miss Roberts.
I won't let it happen again.
Can't be true. She's not alive. That was blood in the water. Her blood. I saw her die. She's not alive. Miss Roberts must have made a mistake. Yes, that's it, a mistake. She did forget the message at first. It must have come in before, yesterday, or last week. Miss Roberts was looking at the wrong page in her book. Of course, that's it. Just a mistake. A perfectly natural mistake. I shouldn't let a little thing like that upset me. I think I'll rest for a minute. I feel a little tired. I guess that's natural. I'll just relax for a moment.
It's after 5, Mr. Stanton. I'll be going now if there's nothing more.
No, I have to hurry along myself. I don't want to be late. Evelyn will be waiting for me.
Oh, no. Don't you remember? She's playing bridge.
Oh, yes, of course. I forgot.
Well, good night, Mr. Stanton.
So it wasn't a mistake. Oh, Miss Roberts doesn't make mistakes. And I have to go home. Home to Evelyn. Evelyn. Evelyn, are you there? Evelyn. Evelyn! I've got to open the bathroom door. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's no one in there. No one alive. Just Evelyn. I've got to go in there. I'm not afraid of Evelyn. She's dead. I know she's dead. Well, what if she's alive? What'll she say? What'll she do? Well, maybe the police are waiting for me in there, waiting to see how I'll act. Oh, no, I can't go in, not yet. Not until I know. If Evelyn is playing bridge, if she really is alive, she's at Mrs. Bronson's. I can find out.
Hello, is that you, Mrs. Bronson?
Yes. Who is this, please?
Arnold. Arnold Stanton.
Why, hello, Mr. Stanton. How are you?
I don't like to bother you, Mrs. Bronson, but there was a message for me this afternoon. Something about Evelyn. Bridge, I think. She isn't there with you, is she?
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, she is. Oh. Would you like to speak to her?
Yes, I would.
Well, just hold on. Evelyn! Evelyn! Just a minute, Mr. Stanton. Are you still there, Evelyn? Hello? Hello?
Evelyn. Evelyn.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Stanton. Evelyn isn't here after all. She must have left while I was talking to you. She's probably on her way home now. She ought to be there any minute. Mr. Stanton, did you hear me? Mr. Stanton?
Evelyn. At last I know. The door is open and I know. There's Evelyn just as I left her. She's dead. Really dead. But Mrs. Bronson told me... They know. They must know. They're trying to trap me. The police must be outside right now waiting to see what I do next. They'll probably come in any minute to arrest me. But they won't get the chance. It's your gun, Evelyn. I gave it to you because you were afraid. Afraid of being alone in the house, but you never needed it. Now I'm afraid, Evelyn. I need the revolver. They found me out. Somehow, somewhere, I slipped. I wish I knew what it was, but there isn't time. Now I'll never know. Pick up the gun. Put it next to my cheek. It's cold against my face. And now, squeeze the trigger.
You think the story is over, don't you? But wait. Fate takes a hand. Wait for the unexpected. Now for the surprising conclusion of Mercy Killing, starring Barry Sullivan, written by Robert Libet and Frank Burt, and produced and directed by Frank K. Danzig. And Evelyn and Arnold were so happy. Too bad. But it's all over now. Well, not quite over. Just a few words more. A short comment from Mrs. Bronson. You remember the bridge-playing matron down the street? She's talking to Inspector Cook from Homicide.
Yes, Inspector. In a way, I feel sort of responsible. You see, Evelyn was such a dear friend, and there was this other person. Really, he was a charming young man, and Evelyn had been seeing him. I told her she was very wrong, but you know how it is, so I sort of covered for her, as they say. As a matter of fact, I called Mr. Stanton's office this afternoon and pretended I was Evelyn. You see, she had asked me to because today was to be something special and she was afraid she'd be late. And then later he telephoned me to check up on her. I had to say she was with me, and when he wanted to talk to her, I pretended she just left. Just imagine. I told him Evelyn was on the way home. And then he went upstairs and found her. Like that. Oh, it must have been horrible. I don't know what he thought, but he must have been overcome. People don't kill themselves unless they are. But anyway, he never found out about the young man. It makes sort of a perfect ending. Poor Mr. Stanton. He loved her so.
¶¶ Killing, starring Barry Sullivan, was transcribed in Hollywood. This is a Hamilton Whitney radio production, presented under the supervision of Alvin C. Gershenson.
Okay, folks, that was The Unexpected from April the 11th of 1948. And as far as I'm concerned, that makes 3 pretty good shows in a row, and 15 minutes pretty darn well spent. Let me know what you think. Well, I guess that's it for what you could probably call the dramatic presentation portion of Night Transmissions, show number 43. And I do want to most sincerely invite you to get in touch with me at nighttransmissions@gmail.com or drop by the website www.nighttransmissions.com. Night Transmissions is one word, no space or underscore or anything between the night and the transmissions. So that said, we're going to play some music now. And I hope you come back next week for Escape's version of Mars is Heaven. Hope I can find it.
It's all the trick was played on me, and it won't detain you long. I came home from sea the other day, and a girl I chanced to meet, and she sassed me up along with her to dance in Patrick Street. Oh, says I, me pretty fair maid, I cannot dance too well. Besides, I'm bound for Newrytown, my parents they do dwell. I've been at sea these last few years, I've saved up £50, and my parents are expecting me tonight in Newrytown. Since you cannot dance too well, then you can have a treat. You can have a glass of brandy and something nice to eat. At 9 o'clock this evening, I leave you to your train. And don't forget to call on me when you come back again. Oh, she seemed to be so friendly, I went and hired a car. We both went down to Patrick Street and on arrival there, the people on the other side, I thought I heard them say, oh, he'll sure be in need of a jaunting car before he gets away. We had not been long in the room when whiskey it came in, and when everyone had had their fill, the dancing did begin. Me and me love, we danced around all to a merry tune, while the other couples did the double shuffle round the room. And when dancing it was over, for bed we did prepare, and after that I fell asleep, the truth I will declare. Me darling and me £50, me gold and all had fled, and there was I, myself, alone, stark naked, lying in bed. In gazing all around me, nothing could I spy but a woman's skirt and jumper at the foot of the bed did lie. I wrung me hands and tore me hair, crying, oh, what will I do? Oh, fare thee well, sweet Newry town, I'm sure I'd never see you. And when nighttime it was come again and daylight was away, I put on the skirt and jumper and I set off for the quay. And when I went on board the ship, the sailors all did say, oh, Jack has grown much prettier since last she went away. Oh, is this the new spring fashion that you went to buy on shore? And where's the shop that sells them? Do you think they may have more? The captain says, now Jack, I thought you were for Newry town. You might have bought a better suit than that for £50. Well, I might have bought a better suit if I had had the chance. I met a girl in High Street, she's asked me to a dance. I dance beyond destruction and I've done it so complete that I vow I'll never go back again and dance in Patrick Street. Come on, you young sailor boys, a warning take by me, and always keep good company when you go on a spree. Be sure and stay clear of Patrick Street, or else you'll rue the day. In a woman's skirt and jumper, they will ship you back to sea.
Eclipse of the heart. only love in the dark. Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart.
Tonight and today.